In 1897, the only things that should have been visible in the night sky were the moon and the stars. But in April of that year, Iowans saw so much more. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we'll find out about a rash of airship sightings in Iowa and the surrounding states in April of 1897. Historian Stephen Arts will give us the lowdown on these UFOs. Then Iowa's trivia king Fred Stark is here. He's been researching history for nearly 50 years and has amassed a truly dizzying collection of information. His specialty is things you won't find on Google. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Iowa's trivia king, Fred Stark of Washington, is standing by. But first, we're going to explore some mysterious lights that were seen in the Iowa sky in 1897. Stephen Arts is here with us today. He's an airship researcher, writer, and photographer. He wrote the article, They Came From Above, for the most recent issue of Iowa History Journal. Hello, Stephen.
Hello. Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. When did you first find out about these strange lights in the sky that were spotted in 1897?
Well, I first learned about them back in 1979 when I lived in Nebraska. And I was going through an Iowa history, a Nebraska history magazine, and I found an article by a man named Rudolf Fumland, which was a reprint of a story that he wrote back in the 30s. And it was kind of intriguing. It was about airships all across the country from 1896 to 1897. And that kind of got me hooked on it, and I started doing research on it after that.
So how did you go about researching it?
Well, I'd order microfilms or microfiche from different libraries and stuff and get them on interlibrary loan and talk to other airship researchers once I got into it and stuff like that. And it just kind of became a passion of sorts.
So you started also looking in old newspapers to find accounts?
Oh, yeah, the newspapers back then. Well, there were more newspapers back then than there are now. And about every newspaper, especially in the cities and the smaller towns, had at least one airship article that I found in several states.
Wow. So this was a very common phenomenon.
Yeah, it was. And it goes back even further than that. I mean, it goes back hundreds, thousands of years. You know, people seeing things up in the sky that they can't explain. You know, so, sometimes they give it a religious meaning, but more modern people, think of it as alien encounters of some sort, you know.
So in 1897, why don't we paint a little bit of a picture of the time? Because, of course, this was before airplanes, right?
Yeah, about 6 years before the Wright brothers.
So, but it was in the public consciousness. People were thinking about flight at this time.
Oh, yeah. A lot of the articles at the time had supposed airship inventors, and there were people working on heavier-than-aircraft, like Samuel Pierpont Langley, Maxim Hiram, Chinook, you know, people like that. And there were a lot of stories about pretty unknown people who were supposedly building aircraft, but you kind of have to take that with a grain of salt.
What was the first sighting that you found in 1897 when you went back into the papers?
The first one?
Yeah, or one of the first.
Well, that's kind of hard to remember. It's been so long. I can tell you that the first airship sightings were in Northern California, back in 1896, around September. And they kind of spread east over the Rockies after that. And most of the, in the Midwest, the big month for airship sightings was April of 1897.
Okay. So in the article that you wrote, you said that One of the first reports of airship sightings came in an April 7th issue of the Waterloo Daily Courier. And I'll just read the quote here. It says, "The mysterious airship seen so often in Kansas passed over this city about 10 o'clock Saturday night. It came from the west and then passed toward the north, moving in an erratic manner. It appeared as a brilliant reddish light and was seen by many reliable people." And I love the wording in this description. I mean, first of all, the newspaper seems to accept as fact that this was an airship and is trying to build the story.
Yeah, there were a lot of newspapers that were pro-airship, but there were also a lot of them that didn't believe it. There's a big controversy about whether, heavier than aircraft could fly at that time. And the Wright brothers later on proved that it was possible. And then there were also newspaper hoaxes back then, too. So when you read the stories, you got to see below the surface, so to speak. You can tell which ones usually is a hoax and which one, where the people actually did see something or thought that they saw something.
How can you tell?
Well, mainly by the wording. If there's no puns in the article or something, it's usually a giveaway that it's an actual sighting. Because back then, reporters, a lot of times, were given license to call people just about anything they wanted to. They called them liars and drunks and stuff like that. Local politics came into the picture sometimes. And those kind of stories, you kind of have to look a little askance at, because they're kind of flavored by the newspaper and the reporter who's reporting it.
Right.
Some of them are just, straightforward, where the airship was, what it looked like. Who the people were, and those are the ones you can really say, they saw something.
What were some of the common descriptions of the things that people were seeing?
A lot similar to ones today. They were elongated, cigar-shaped, had red or green lights, speeds that were fantastic even now. But even back then were even more fantastic because the only thing going up in the air back then was balloons, and they couldn't travel very fast, and they couldn't travel in an erratic manner like aircraft do today. And even some aircraft today might have a hard time traveling in the kind of shapes that were described back then.
One of the interesting things that you point out in the article is that there would be simultaneous sightings reported in newspapers in different cities.
Oh, yeah. When the airship sightings first started back in California and even in the Midwest, they were always talking about the airship as if there was only one airship. But if you read the articles and you know the times and the days and everything, there had to have been more than one of whatever it was.
Right.
There's, like I said, April of 1897 was the busiest month. And, I mean, they were seen all over the Midwest in about 12 or more states.
Well, I'm going to read another excerpt here. This is from the Iowa State Register on April 10th. They took a little bit more of a skeptical take on this, but just slightly. It says, "The first man to see the airship or the mysterious light was Al Nichols, a veteran switchman employed by the Rock Island Railroad and a man to whom sobriety is second nature. He was coming toward Des Moines from home when his attention was attracted to a peculiar light in the heavens, which seemed to be moving at a rapid gait. It did not have the appearance of a star, and the light was more like that of a huge lantern." Then you also publish a really quite outlandish report that comes a little bit later. On April 16th in the Jefferson B, when they said that 200 people in Jefferson were looking for an airship that seemed to have done some fancy maneuvers and then crashed?
Yeah. I found that one years ago because my wife was from Jefferson. So I ordered the Jefferson newspaper and I found the airship report. So I kind of put it in there, but the airship crashes, especially, I think you have to take with a grain of salt, especially the ones back then, because there was like an airship crash that I just saw on the History Channel yesterday, a day before, from Aurora, Texas. That's the best known one that there is. But there were also there was also a crash site in a supposed crash site in Pavilion, Michigan, besides Jefferson.
And, well, this crash site in Jefferson, apparently, mm-hmm. I mean, they never saw the craft, although one guy claimed to have seen it. And apparently, mm-hmm. according to reports, they said that it went 100 feet into the ground.
Yeah, that would have left quite a big hole, yeah.
You would think so. You would think so. So
yeah.
these reports were very common in April in Iowa and the surrounding states. Then what happened?
Well, they kind of drifted away and disappeared after around May or June of 1897, and you don't find very many of them after that. I mean, throughout history, you find, I think there was a spate of airship sightings in 1909, just before World War One. Things like that. And there's, of course, the ones that started back in after the end of World War Two, which are continuing today.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to think that, it might not be a little green man and flying saucers, but there's got to be some reason why people are seeing all these lights, especially back then,
Right. So what do you think it was in 1897 that set this off?
I really couldn't tell you. I usually let my readers make their own decisions. Because they're intelligent people,
But there's something that keeps you searching.
Well, yeah, it's kind of a fascinating part of American history. I think part of the detraction is the difference in cultures from back then as compared to today. Back then it was I'd say it was a lot more freer. You could express yourself better without having to worry about somebody suing you, as a lot of newspaper reporters kind of proved back then, because they were calling people all sorts of names, not really nasty names. I mean, they didn't get into the real nasty stuff back then, but it was just a totally different way of thinking than it is today. Back then there was more of a human element to it, although there were a few supposed alien sightings. But today it's mostly become a new age thing, where, little green men from outer space are coming down to save the world and stuff like that.
Right. Well, Stephen, thank you so much for talking with me today.
You're welcome.
Stephen Arts is an airship researcher, writer, and photographer. He wrote the article They Came From Above for the most recent issue of Iowa History Journal. It was about the airship sightings that took place in Iowa in April of 1897. Coming up in just a moment, Iowa's trivia king, Fred Stark of Washington, Iowa, will be in the studio with me. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and with me now is Iowa's trivia king, Fred Stark of Washington, Iowa. And Fred, I just handed you those headphones. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, all right. We didn't get a chance to check that out before we got on the air. And Fred, let's start with a little bit of background on you, because you are Iowa's trivia king, but this is not an official career for you. This is something that started for you almost 50 years ago when you started really digging into and researching Iowa history. But you were a band instructor at the time, right?
Yes, I've been a band instructor down through the years, music education, probably say with a history minor. But it always fascinated me to figure out all these little things. I usually went to a number of newspapers, and I would clip out little articles saying this was the first drive-in in the state, this was the last that. And so I started to collect these things. And over the years, I realized, my golly, I've got something here. And it goes, the pile got bigger and bigger and bigger. And a lot of this stuff is not in Google, and you can't really locate it. So I feel like I have a treasure or treasury of unique facts in Iowa. And while we call it trivia, I call it Americana, So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Why do you think you got started doing this? What was it that tripped your trigger?
That's a good question. Generally speaking, I always liked to collect things in the sense that if I thought they were historically interesting, I thought, save it. Don't throw it away. There may be a purpose for it. I've always had a strong history minor. I probably would have been a history teacher rather than a band director. And I always was always lucky. I was a railroad buff, along with my cousin, my brother. And we'd ride all over the trains in the Midwest, the trolleys and things like that, and collected things. And so I thought, don't throw them away. And luckily, my mother didn't throw away all my stuff growing up.
So as you started collecting these things, how did you save them?
Well, basically, what I would do is I would go through, and this is true, it's where you need to have room for it. Kyle Munson, who does a great job of reporting, I know, came out to my house and looked at it in his analysis.
Kyle Munson of the Des Moines Register,
Yeah, yeah, he does a great job there. And he made the comment, it was kind of like the House of the Rocks meets the Library of Congress. But I don't get me wrong, the whole house is not impassable or anything like that. I've got shed and everything else. But generally, I store things there. But generally, I would clip out articles, or I would save centennial posters, or even buy a cup or a spoon because it represented something of the town. And I did this for all the years, for about 48 years. And so I've got all the centennial plates, town history books of that, and it's just a matter of picking them up. And I thought, I've got something here.
How do you organize this stuff? I mean, this sounds like boxes and boxes and boxes full of stuff.
Yeah, you do. You have to have generally the boxes on history articles, you label them as such, put them aside. That's why I said it takes a while. The books are a little more organized because it's just mainly pertaining to the history of Iowa as such, not other books. I'm not going to go hog wild and something like that, see. But the idea is to do that and to pick up a map. And we also do something else I'm going to mention, what we call industrial archaeology. There's about three of us, Philip Berleski, Al Brotherton, myself, sometimes my cousin Pete Weller. We go around the state looking for the old abandoned towns, the old railroad lines that used to be, the old this, the old that, and we usually have our old maps to show things. The DeLorean map is a great one, which is a GPS-type one, and we always do this in November or in March, because in November all the leaves are down, you can see things that you couldn't see, and the same with March.
So industrial archaeology is what you're calling it. Did you coin that term?
It's a term that's now starting to come into being. I think we're some of the front runners on this one of taking trips. We could sponsor, take a bus and take people around the state of Iowa because we've been doing this now for a couple of years. Other people are doing this too, but to me it captures the whole term from all the abandoned places, the old places, because some of these small towns are all disappearing altogether.
Give me an example of a place that you've gone.
Well, let's take an example of just south of Centerville, for example, there's a town called Sedan, where five railroad lines all came together in the country and actually had a passenger station and everything else. Imagine five lines there. There's nothing there today. So it's interesting. But you see all the abandoned right-of-ways that were there, and it was really fantastic on it. That's just one example. We'd go down and see the coal mines, but we always would go with a couple of people.
Is there anything left over in the buildings or anything?
Not in that particular place, but we've gone to towns in Centerville and stuff, and we've seen things. Just the last week, we went along the Des Moines River from Farmington down to Keokuk, and it was amazing to retrace some of the things down there.
So as you're going on these industrial archaeological trips and looking around, what kind of information are you gathering?
Well, basically, we're looking. We have our cameras here and things to catch pictures as such on this. We're looking for the abandoned railroad lines. I am fortunate to have a 1927 pocket atlas, about yay high, big, and it has the highways and the train lines superimposed in that, and that is great. So I find that that is when we use the guide, and then we superimpose those lines over a DeLorean map, and we use that as a guide. And with three or four of us in a car, we can spot things, or we look for the old unusual house structures. We were down in Keokuk the other day with the big factory there that made cattle equipment and confinement stuff, and it was amazing what we all come across, some of the buildings. Keokuk may be one of the best surprises in the state.
As you are gathering this information, what are you doing with it?
Basically, somewhere along the line, I'm going to publish some kind of book to show the first, the last, and so forth, because I certainly am on the right track. I've not found anyone that's quite done what I've done as far as researching where's the oldest restaurants, the oldest drugstores. I have it. In fact, I got a lot of that information here today.
Now, when you first started doing this, again, this was a personal passion, or maybe even an obsession. We might call it that. When did it become something that you started sharing with other people?
Well, generally you share with your friends. That's the first thing, because by doing that you are able to do more than just one person. So you don't try to do it yourself. That's why, as I say, we always go around with a group of people. But this is kind of a hobby, because I'm also on city council, and I'm also with Lions Club International. In fact, I'll be a district governor there, and even with the band directors of Iowa, I'm their parliamentarian. So I do a lot of things besides just that. But to me, this is kind of a hobby, and once you're retired, you can spend more time doing something like that. But we share it with as many people as possible. So I said we could take a bus tour of people around.
Absolutely. Well, and you do go around and you give programs.
Right,
tell me about
correct.
Your programs. What do you share with people?
Well, basically, I use two topics here. The first one I would say is called Things You Didn't Know About Iowa, or You Got to Know the Territory. And another topic I use then is Iowa Cities, Big and Small. And I am available for going out and giving talks on that. Usually ask for mileage or something like that. And I've been doing that all over the state, and they enjoy it. I used to get a big map. You get the biggest map you can get is from the Iowa Highway Department, Ames, about $22. And I usually, if I don't use slides or projector or whatever scenes on the wall, I use the map like a weatherman, and then I ask them to stump me on certain questions along the way.
So, when did you start doing that?
That was about 3-4 years ago, something like that. I was, one year, I was the state trivia judge for the Iowa Trivia Contest there in Des Moines.
So. Right, on the Van and Bonnie show,
right? Yes.
And you're 73 years old now?
Yes. I don't feel it. I'm more like 45 in spirit. How's that?
All right. You're clearly a man with a great deal of energy. Has that always been the case?
Yeah, I think so. I think basically if you have one life to live, make the most of it.
All right. Well, give us a little bit of a taste of what we don't know about Iowa.
Okay, very good. I'll cover a few things here. For example, I have different topics I use. For example, if we take the drugstores, I always look, where's the oldest drugstore? Probably that's Hammer Pharmacy in Des Moines, started in 1872. They kind of claim to be it. Sometimes places that claim to be it aren't always it, but they make that distinction. I haven't seen anyone disagree with them. Another old one is the one in Lenox called Tyler Pharmacy in 1880. So that gives you an idea of the drugstores. The oldest bakeries, and this was very interesting here, is the one Yarsma's Bakery, started in 1898 in Pella on the square. Sikora's Bakery in Cedar Rapids started in 1903. So while I used to think maybe Sikora's was the oldest, actually Yarsma's is that. Now, they could actually use that in their title. Now, I could be surprised. There may be something in the woodworks that I didn't know about that comes out and says, wait, you're wrong. And that's what's so fun about this, because I learn as I go along. And I may just have people wind up telling me that there's other ones. That's what the fun of this is.
Right. Well, is there any way to verify it when you get a fact like that?
The best way I do it is my own research. That's why I say I have it. For example, here I have a thing from Yarsma's Bakery. And it says there, the tradition of good taste since 1898. Now, that's what I say is my proof, okay?
All right.
And I have loads of those kind of things. I'll cover one other thing here about the oldest soda fountain, supposedly maybe in the United States, or at least in Iowa, the candy kitchen or whatever you call it in Iowa, candy shop in Wilton is certainly well known. Mm-hmm. Started after the 1860s, although it had different families there. And that is unique. Also, one in Moline I'm going to talk about, Lago Marcinos, 1908. You walk into that place over in Moline and you think you're in a 1910 restaurant. Now, they have one in the village, East Village, too. So that is one area. Would you like me to keep going?
Mention sure,
okay.
Absolutely.
Let's take the hotels. The oldest continuous hotel claims to be the Black Hawk Hotel in the 1880s possibly on that one there.
And that's on Main Street in Cedar Falls.
Right, and I stayed there in the 1960s when it was a derelict hotel.
Well, it was derelict through much of my youth. I grew up in Cedar Falls.
Okay,
so.
I went to Wartburg College there before I then was in Mount Aaron in Washington here. Okay,
and it's beautiful now, I need
yes,
to say that.
Yes, oh, it is. It's wonderful. Other ones that are old is the one in Strawberry Point. The Franklin Hotel actually started in 1853, but it's not continuous because they had to change things. And then we got a few mystery
so
ones.
So the Black Hawk Hotel is the oldest continuously
operating.
That.
Yes, they
okay,
claim
they
it.
Never closed.
Yes, I guess that's it. Now, there's another interesting one, just to give you an idea. The American Inn established on this in 1854 in downtown McGregor. Now, it may not be continuous, but it sure kind of gives that idea. So there's a number of cases where we need to check things out. And again, that's where we use different titles, oldest and oldest continuous.
How's okay.
That? Okay.
Yeah, that's great. So when you compile this information, or do you compile the information?
Yeah.
Obviously, you bring it together for giving programs.
Right.
Are you trying to put together a computer database with
that's
all of this?
That's what I'm in the process of doing right now, to keep track of all these things so I can then refer and pull them up there as such and use a projector to show a regular show on this. But generally, I do enough on the talking there. But anyway, those are some of the oldest ones. There are some other beautiful hotels, by the way. I don't mean to slight any of the others, like Elvis in Fort Madison, the Hotel Winnicek in Des Moines, the Hotel Petit in Perry, and so forth. So that's another example. I'll just happen to hit another area here, for example, and this more is maybe in terms of geography. And this might be, I've got to be careful because if we have some trivia questions, I may wind up doing something.
Giving
here.
Away the answer.
Yeah, I'd be careful here. Okay. In Iowa, we used to have canals, believe it or not. Back in the 1840s and 1850s, canals were more popular in the East before the railroads came. Iowa had four canals. One is still there. And that one is in the Amana colonies. If you ever drive into Amana's, to the main Amana, you cross sort of a ditch. That was the canal. The other three were down in Keokuk, where they built the big dam to replace it. Wapello, which you can actually see when you drive north out of town, it's a ditch, actually, and one out of Davenport there for the rapids. So those were the four canals that existed in Iowa on that.
Oh, okay? Wow.
Yeah. The longest bridge in Iowa is actually the one over Red Rock Reservoir. Is that, what, Highway 14 or so? I think if I got the wrong number, I've got the wrong number. Then we get some that have controversies, all right? The only county with two courthouses, well, that happens to be Lee County down in Keokuk and Fort Madison. The legislature one time allowed two counties to have two courthouses. That was one. The other one was Pottawatomie County, and that was at Council Bluffs and, I believe, Avoca. And eventually that one just resorted back to Council Bluffs. But we still have two of those in Lee County.
And do you go into the reasons why two counties were allowed to have two courthouses?
Yeah, because the legislature at that time, in its infinite wisdom or not wisdom, granted those counties and exceptions. And it's the early days of the formation of Iowa, and they said, we'll allow this to happen as such. But none of the others were there. There was tremendous battles in the 1850s, 60s, 70s, on up about where the county courthouse was going to be, because that made the town, the other towns were going to be nothing. And so you had a lot of fights on that, and finally the legislature had to set strict rules on how often you could change and stuff. That was some of the bitter fights. And local newspapers didn't help it one bit either, so you can imagine.
I'm talking right now with Iowa's Trivia King, Fred Stark of Washington, Iowa, former band director in Mount Air and in Washington. And for 50 years or so, he's been researching Iowa history, and he gives programs to people, to groups, to share some of the things that he's found out about Iowa history. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org if you have any questions for Fred. And Fred has some questions for you. Should we throw out a trivia question, Fred?
Okay. Hey, let's see. I'll flip over here.
Put you on the spot.
Well, yeah, I'm just finding the right paper. Here we are. I have medium questions, and I have harder questions. So let's see what happens here. We'll try one here. What is the fourth largest city in Iowa?
The fourth largest city in Iowa. And is that for me or is that for the audience, Fred?
That's that could be for the audience, all right?
Okay, so the fourth largest city in Iowa. That's one of those that you could cheat and go to Google on, right?
Possibly.
But you shouldn't. Just try.
Yes, okay.
Try without. 866-780-9100. We have bragging rights to offer you today if you get this question right. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. So have you compiled a whole lot of questions? Do you quiz people when you get programs?
Yes, I do. I have a number of them. I was going to get to one area here that really will cause some interest, maybe the food, the restaurants in Iowa. where is the oldest restaurant and so forth. Would you want me to just go ahead unless they have a phone call coming in?
Well, we've got a bunch of people on the line, but we'll get to them after the break. So tell me a little bit about restaurants.
Okay, basically the oldest restaurant, as they say, claims to be Brighton Box, about 1852 in Balltown, Iowa. Even though it burned down a couple times, it's there. What is very unique is where is the second or the third oldest? And I myself have done a little research on this because it depends where your restaurant number is, I suppose, in the state as such, but that's not always true, too. Kelms in St. Donatus is also started in the 1850s and has a legal claim for being apparently number two. The third oldest restaurant in Iowa claims to be the Lighthouse, and I have mentioned that at times at the restaurant, and I noticed they finally, on their brochure, they wind up having the oldest lighthouse, the lighthouse being listed as the third oldest. It's a great place on Old Marion Road outside of Cedar Rapids. They have live entertainment there on Friday and Saturday with a jazz group of either the Eddie Picard group or Dave Watson.
All right, we're going to take a break here. I'm talking with Iowa's trivia king, Fred Stark, and you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we're working on a trivia question right now. Tell us what the fourth largest city in Iowa is. 866-780-9100. We'll get the answer after the break, or we'll hear answers from you after the break. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, I'm talking with Iowa's trivia king, Fred Stark of Washington, Iowa. In his retirement, he's been traveling around giving programs about Iowa trivia and sharing it with many people. He's also been engaging in industrial archaeology, finding out about some of the places in Iowa, the businesses that used to operate in the state. And he's here with me today, and he threw out a question before the break. And why don't you repeat it for us? Fred, your question
was, what is the fourth largest city in Iowa?
All right. And Jean was the first one on the line from Cedar Rapids. Hi, Jean.
Hi.
What's your answer?
Sioux City?
All right.
Yes.
Sioux City. Ding, ding. Well done. So, Jean, I, like I said, we have bragging rights to offer you. Is that something you knew off the top of your head?
No, I just guessed.
Oh, really? It was just a guess.
Yeah.
Did you have anything that, did you think there was something else in close contention?
Maybe Iowa City.
All right.
Actually, that would have been just after Sioux City comes Waterloo, and then about a couple thousand below that is Iowa City. So you're close.
Okay. All right. Jean, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
You can brag about that all day long.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot. And we have questions for you as well on the line. David's on the line from Decorah with a question. Hi, David.
Hi, thank you so much. I grew up in Sioux City, and I knew that was the right answer. So, two questions, different parts of the state. One, Sioux City-based. Every grade school child in Sioux City in the 50s and 60s learned about the Council Oak Tree, C-O-U-N-C-I-L, the Council Oak Tree in Sioux City between the agreements between the settlers and the natives. Any light to shed on that? The other one would be, what about the Honeybee War between Missouri and Iowa, and did the railroad lines have anything to do with that?
Yeah, the council tree thing, by the way, is mentioned in a book put out by the DNR, an older book. In fact, it's sort of a glossy type of brochure of about 20 pages, and that council tree is mentioned in there along with other trees across the state. I wish they reissued it because I don't think I see it anymore, but oftentimes they would be used for meetings with the Indians and so forth. There's a number of trees like that around the state. There's one in LeClaire, for example, and there's other places too, but that was that is mentioned in the publication by the DNR. If you might want to check on the historic trees in Iowa, I think it's some of the title. I normally would bring it with me, but I brought so much, didn't bring enough here. On the stuff with the Honey War was a result of a disputed boundary there in which they really did a poor job of laying out the southern boundary of Iowa and Missouri. And when they came back, they did in the fall, I think, or something like that, and came back the next year, they couldn't find the marks, and they moved it up about two townships, which then upset those people that thought they were in Iowa because now they were going to have to pay Missouri taxes. And so the Missouri governor started to get discuss of that, sent out the militia, I believe, and went and cut off some of their honey trees. Now, honey was very important that time because there was no sugar in the state, and that was their source of sugar, basically, other than if you could get some sorghum, which wasn't very much on that. And so that just about promoted a fight. Iowa sent out some people to check on, to perhaps go into battle here, but the Missouri people had left at that point. Finally, I believe Supreme Court decided we'll make a marker every 25 miles. I was checking the 20, I think it was less than 25, across the state, a metal stake. It was pounded into the ground going across there, in which they again restored those last two townships to Iowa. And
wow.
There are only two of those metal markers left. One is over by Blockton, Iowa, and one is over by Centerville. And to me, they're unique because they were used as a dividing point as such. That area is called Lapland, as you probably know, the last two areas. I used to live in Mount Air there, which was a great area, which was just north of that area. And I thoroughly enjoyed all the 9 years or so that I was living in that spot. So that's a little bit
great.
Of the hunt were.
You've convinced me you're the Iowa trivia meister, So I won't. I guess I won't even ask you about where the Nutty Bar at Arnold's Park started from.
Okay, all right. I'll hold off on that. All right, thanks.
All right, David. Thanks a lot for your call. And let's go to Bill in Des Moines next. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I've got a question to see if we can stump the trivia king. And Fred, you probably know me. I knew Fred when he was teaching.
Who is this?
Bill Sherman from
Des Moines. Bill. Oh, my gosh. Okay.
my trivia question, what year and where was the first teacher strike in Iowa?
And by the way, Bill Sherman, who is an expert in the Iowa school,
Country schools. And Bill has been on the air with us on that topic a number of times.
And I knew Bill all the way. I met him first when he was in the Hawkeye Marching Band, back in 1962.
Well, that does go back a ways.
That's right. Now, your question, that first strike occurred, actually, there, I believe it was right around 1970 in Keokuk, in which the administration and the teachers were not, well, they wanted to introduce merit pay at that particular point. And that caused quite an uproar. The teachers walked out on that one and struck for really the first time. This really upset the legislators so much that they eventually passed the Professional Negotiations Bill about 1975-76. One woman was the only woman that ever got jailed. Woman teacher, Billy Morrow, I think her name was.
Yeah.
She was the secretary of the KEA. And they put her in jail. And I have her speech that she has, which was one of the most dramatic speeches she ever did, and said, I'm doing this for the children, not for the people of Iowa on that. And she had to stay in the cell. And to me, she is a hero. By the way, I might mention I also am sort of the reservoir for all the historic things with the Iowa State Education Association as far as history goes. And so when you mention that, my eyes kind of lit up on that. But I thank you, Bill, for that. Okay.
All right, Bill, thanks a lot for your call. And I'm getting the impression, Fred, that in spite of the fact that you're trying to put together a computer database, that you can pretty much rely on your brain for this as well. Do you remember all this stuff?
Let's put it this way. When you get emotionally excited, you remember better than when you're dull and sleepy. That's why you always remember your best things from emotional experiences.
All right. We've got a couple more questions from listeners, and then I'd love for you to throw out a few, maybe from your medium list for me there. Ben is on the line in Rippey. Hi, Ben.
This is Danny.
Oh,
Danny,
I'm sorry.
Rippey.
Danny and Rippey. Thanks a lot.
Okay. I got two quick questions. If it rains on the east side of the courthouse, the water flows to the Mississippi. If it rains on the west side of the courthouse, the water flows to the Missouri. What courthouse?
Well, that dividing line was in the middle. In fact, down the southern part was the Grand River, was the southern part. So you're telling me that one of those courthouses like that, and I'd have to double-check it. But the dividing line occurs, goes toward the middle of the state and goes up there, in which water goes one side, one goes the other one. And I remember reading that one, and right off the bat, I'd have to go and check my resources.
Okay, Denny, you tell us then.
Yeah.
Lucas County.
Okay, it's the Lucas down in the southern part of, which is Lucas County. Yeah, okay, Lucas, Iowa, where the coal mining person, John L. Lewis, is from.
Okay, and then what town has hatches 50 million turkeys, and what's the name of the company, and where is it located? They hatch 50 million turkeys, largest in the world.
Hmm. Okay, well, let me just say this about Iowa. First of all, for many years before, the capital of Iowa, the turkey capital, probably was Kelowna, with called Maple Crest Turkeys. And they were later bought out by Swift Company there and then moved out of Kelowna. But for many years, that was probably considered the turkey capital. Right now, although there's been no, I know we have the West Liberty turkey thing, we also have Wayland turkey. That seems right now, and I've asked this question about it, that it seems like the turkey capital of Iowa right now seems to be down in the Wayland, Iowa area. Now, you may have a different view.
Okay, it's Osceola, and it's called Valley of the Moon. It's just
okay.
A year too old.
Oh, okay, just a year too old, yeah.
Because, all right, Denny.
Very good, because that's why I say usually Wayland right now is, if you want to see the turkey capital of Iowa for growing turkeys and stuff, usually right around Wayland. Okay.
All right, Denny, thanks a lot for your call. And Jeremy's on the line from Newton. Hi, Jeremy.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is kind of a comment question. Years ago, my grandmother showed me an article in a local paper out of Humboldt County that said that the farm that my father grew up near Renwick was the first farmhouse in Iowa to have electricity. Apparently, my great-grandfather was one of the chairmen on REC back
in the
20s.
Yes. That was one of the first areas in the state to have REC put in on that, I believe.
Oakdale, the Helmke Farm.
Yeah, that was it. That was up right up there. That was the our first REC, I believe, right up in that area there. Okay?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Yeah.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for your call, Jeremy. And why don't you throw out a couple of those medium questions for me? Let's see how I do. I'm ready.
Oh, Fred. Okay. All right. Shall I go ahead with just some more comments or questions or just?
Yeah. Let's see how I can do here.
Okay.
I'm
all
sure that
right.
many of you in the audience will do better than I will
all
do.
Right.
But we'll get a sample of what some of these questions are.
What is the state rock of Iowa?
The state rock of Iowa, is that the geode?
That is correct. Yes. I'll give you another one here. What festival is held annually in Decorah?
Oh, now I'm going to offend people. I don't know the answer to that one.
Okay, that was a Nordic Fest.
Okay.
Oh, you did very good there.
I should have known that.
That's all right. That's all right. That's it. Do you want me to go on, or should I go ahead and mention a few other little historic tidbits here?
Oh, give me a couple more.
Okay, all right. In what month are the Drake Relays held?
April.
Right, you're on that one. That's very good on that one. Where is the largest grotto in Iowa?
West Bend.
Right. You're very good. See? How's that? Okay.
All right. Give us a few more tidbits then.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to go on here. I mentioned about restaurants on this one here. I'm going to mention a few other little things here also. I started with the grocery stores here. The oldest grocery store in the state of Iowa is Wilkie's in Elkader, and that's dating from 1868. Actually, I went to Elkader and Monona, but the one presently, I believe, going is the one in Elkader, and they have that in their sign, so it's kind of unique. It's to see that. The other major grocery stores that occurred in Iowa occurred later. Hy-Vee, as you know, being the biggest in the state, was in 1930. They started in the town called Beaconsfield, Iowa, which is considered to be one of the smallest towns in Iowa, that in Leroy. It's also home to one of the astronauts named Peggy Whitson, who I had as a student before I came from
Wonderful.
There. Yes, yeah, so that's it. Dolls, of course, started in 1931, a year later, and that was in Des Moines. And they have about 13 stores. And the Fairway operation started in 1938, basically around the Boone area, and they have about 100 stores. What made these stores unique was they changed ways shopping used to go. Up to about 1930, you used to go to a grocery store, and they had everything behind the counter, and they'd give it to you. And in about 1933 or so in Memphis, Tennessee, Piggly Wiggly came up with the idea of a supermarket where they shop up and down the aisles, and they simply pay for it at a cash register, a revolutionary new idea. And that's how come you have to change in a lot of those things. The oldest meat market, by the way, I believe, unless I'm wrong, is the one at Pella. And I just missed the name on that one. I changed things on that one. Hometown one, right near Yarsmus on that one.
Okay.
All right. So that gives you a few more facts on that. I could throw a few more little other things, little tidbits here. Iowa's remaining drive-ins, you might be curious. I don't think I talked about that. There are only four left. Newton, Iowa, Maquoketa, Grandview, and Spirit Lake. And those are the only four left as such on that one.
Wow. And there were hundreds.
Yeah, there are hundreds of those. And one other area, I'd say the oldest music store, I believe, and I was always argue. That's why I learned things, could be a Griggs Music Store in Davenport. It's probably a little bit over 100 years. Other old ones, if Kuiper's is still going, they would be in the running there. And Meister's Music Store in Keokuk in 1922. So,
Fred, this obviously gives you a lot of joy to find this information and to share it with people. Why do you think it's important to, maybe not to memorize all of it, but to have an idea of some of these?
Okay, I think, first of all, that Iowa needs to be a little more cognizant of their historic past. If we don't document some of these things, people will forget about it. Some states do that. They say, this is the first so-and-so, first that. We don't. Iowa is a great state to live in, but sometimes we don't like to brag about what we do. And I think it's important that we keep track of these things. I hate to see the longtime store, one I'm checking out right now at the oldest tavern in the state may have just gone out of business. I got to check them out. Frick's in Davenport, 1880s, 1890s. They just went like that. I mean, if it's the oldest or something, there's got to be some ambience inside a building. To me, and that's what I enjoy, going in there and saying, this building has been here for umpteen years. And I go around the state. I like to go, for example, to find a restaurant that has unique atmosphere. And ever so often I can find it. I'm going to just cite one here, and that is the German restaurant on Ronnenberg Street in Dubuque, the Europia House or Bierstube. It has a German flag outside of it. There you get authentic German food. In the Amanas, that's good. It's more American German food. But up there, it's German food, and you feel like you're in a tavern in Austria or Germany.
And what is your favorite thing when you're sharing this information with other people? What do you like to see in their eyes? How do you like people to respond?
Well, I can see by their eyes that they get excited, but also they can excite me because they'll tell me something I don't know. I'm always learning, and I'm always subject to finding a mistake or something like that. And that's why I say, as I go through it, it's kind of like untangling a puzzle, and it's kind of unknown. I call it uncharted territory. I've not found anyone that's quite doing it to the extent that I've been doing it. And as I go through this, I thought, we've got an uncovered treasury of things that really should be documented. So that's what I'm working on.
Absolutely. Well, and you, as we mentioned earlier, you're a busy man. So you're the state parliamentarian for the Lions of Iowa.
And band directors,
and
too.
The Bandmasters Association. Yeah. And you are a three-term Washington City Council
member. I still am.
Okay, a three-term Washington City Council member. You're collecting all this trivia. Are you going to have time to write a book about it?
It could be. There's one other project, and I don't mean to prolong it here. That is, I'm with the Iowa Band Movement. The Iowa Band Directors have a project which we're trying to document the various things that have happened in the band movement. Jay Kahn and myself are doing that.
So, all right. Well, I hope you get that book done. Yeah. Because we want to read it.
Yeah.
All right. Iowa's trivia king, Fred Stark, a retired educator from Washington, Iowa. Fred, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. You can get in touch with us anytime. Send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We want to hear your thoughts on what you've heard on the show. We want to hear your suggestions for things you'd like to hear on the show. Again, that's talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up tomorrow, our holiday books show. We'll find out what books you might want to add to your holiday wish list. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.